Thanks, Heather. How are you all doing? I think we got the fans installed just in time. If you took your bulletin, if you have a bulletin, if you fold it in half, you can do this, right? So maybe, well, maybe not so close to your mic if you're wearing one. But maybe we should, Jen, start putting these on cardstock or something, you know, a little on hot Sundays like this. Now, you've come to church on a hot July Sunday, so just to mix it up, I want you to imagine for a moment that instead of coming to a Christian worship service to hear a sermon about a psalm, I want you to imagine instead that you have gone to Red Deer College and you were in a musicology class. I didn't know there was a thing called musicology until my daughter decided to get her master's in it. And the lecture today is on the music and lyrics of the band U2. You've already heard one of the songs that they've made famous, Psalm 40. And in particular, we're going to look at the song, Where the Streets Have No Name. So let's just look at the lyrics on the screen, and let's listen to the song, and let's deeply analyze what these words mean. Go ahead. Okay, so let me just read those words for you. I want to run. I want to hide. I want to tear down the walls that hold me inside. I want to reach out and touch the flame where the streets have no name. Which do you prefer, me reading or you two singing? That's okay. You don't need to, this is not an audience participation. Doesn't have the same impact, just reading the words, just seeing the words. There's something about the words sung and the way they're sung. These are song lyrics. They're poetry. And there is something about poetry and music lyrics that goes beyond the words. Besides the bad grammar, I want to run, you know, these words, they mean something more than just the sum of the letters on the page. Now, if we were all U2 fans, and I know a number of you probably are, we got into small groups and we discussed, what do you think it means? How does this song hit you? What does it make you think of? What does it make you feel? We actually might get a number of different answers. We wouldn't all have the exact same experience or thought or impact or feeling around it. And we might actually come to it differently today than we would have 2 years ago or 5 years ago as well. You can't narrow it down to one answer. And to try to do it diminishes the power of the song. It touches our heart. Poetry, songs aren't like recipe books. They're not like science books. They're not even like novels. Really good songs and really good poetry somehow convey meaning beyond the words, and they go straight to our heart. So this summer, Ben and I are preaching on the Psalms. And guess what? The Psalms are poetry. They're song lyrics. You can't just read the Psalms, and Ben and I can't preach on the Psalms the way we would on, say, the book of Romans or Matthew or Leviticus. Gordon Fee and Douglas Stewart have written a book called How to Read the Bible for All It's Worth, and they write this about the Psalms. They say that Hebrew poetry was addressed to the mind, but through the heart. Much of the language is intentionally emotive. Therefore, we have to be careful not to over-exegete Psalms. That means don't over-preach them, right? Don't over-analyze them. They're intended to evoke feelings and to stimulate a response that goes beyond mere cognition, mere understanding of facts. So while the Psalms contain and reflect doctrine, and they have history, they're not intended, I love this line, they're not intended to be repositories of doctrinal exposition. Try to put that into a song or a poem. So what Ben and I want to do this summer is help you understand how to read and use the Psalms, to help you get into the Psalms and help the Psalms get into you. Because that just becomes a vehicle, a means for us to connect with God in honesty and in ways that just, you know, our academic, intellectual minds can't do. And the summer is a great time to do this. It's a great time to experiment with the Psalms. You can take the Psalms with you anywhere. You can pray them and sing them in a canoe or on a hike or while driving or while looking up at the stars or while sipping coffee, watching the sunset. In fact, those are probably the best times to use the Psalms. And summer is a time when the normal routines of our life get disrupted. And a lot of the regular practice and routines that we have that help us stay grounded in God, whether it's coming to worship service every Sunday, or whether it's being part of a small group Bible study, or even just the routines that we have going to school or to work, they get disrupted by vacations. And sometimes we end up drifting away from God because we've lost our routine. So I just want to encourage you to have a summer psalm routine. Build that in. Develop a habit or a practice. Simple one. You can do on your own. You can do with a family member or a friend. So today I just want to talk a little bit about one psalm, Psalm 121. Hopefully just enough to open it up a little bit to you, not to over-exegete it or analyze it to death. And then I want to give you some, I'm going to give you the homework now. I'm going to talk about it a little bit, but I want to really encourage you this week, hopefully once a day, just to pray this psalm. We're going to sing the psalm at the end of the service, and if that's a tune you know, you can sing the psalm. That's the application. I'm not going to give you the whole application today. The application is going to come when you pray and sing and incorporate the psalm into your life. That's going to have way more impact than just listening to me talk for the next 15 minutes or so. But let's start by reading the psalm all together. I'm going to have the words on the screen. I'll read the odd number, you know, 1, 3, 5, 7, and you read the even numbers, okay? Psalm 121, a psalm of ascents. I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from?
My help comes from the Lord, the Maker of heaven and earth.
He will not let your foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. The Lord watches over you. The Lord is your shade. That's a good word today. At your right hand. The Lord will keep you from all harm. He will watch over your life. Amen. Powerful words. Starts off by saying it's a psalm of ascent. So let's start there. What is a psalm of ascent? Well, if you know what the word ascent means, it means to kind of go up. It's a psalm of going up. Going up to Jerusalem, which was a high point geographically as well as spiritually in the life of Israel. And this is one of 15 psalms of ascent, of going up to Jerusalem, because three times a year, the people of Israel, they were supposed to anyways, go to Jerusalem on a pilgrimage for one of their high festivals. And so it's a travel song. It's a pilgrim song, which means it's a great summer psalm for many of us. I just want to read a little bit what one of my favorite authors has written about this psalm, Eugene Peterson, about this pilgrim psalms in the book A Long Obedience in the Same Direction. This is what he says. He says, in going against the stream of the world's ways, there are two designations for people of faith that are extremely useful. Disciple and pilgrim. Disciples are people who spend their lives apprenticed to their master, Jesus. And pilgrim is a word that tells us we are people who spend our lives going someplace, and we're going to God. And this is why Peterson says, why he's so passionate about us thinking of ourselves as pilgrims. He says there's a great market for religious experience in our world, but there's little enthusiasm for the patient acquisition of virtue. Very little inclination to sign up for a long apprenticeship in what earlier generations called holiness. Religion in our time has been captured by the tourist mindset. Everyone's in a hurry. They're impatient for results. But Eugene, quoting someone else, says the essential thing is that there should be a long obedience in the same direction. I want to pause for just a minute and talk about that patient acquisition of virtue, that long apprenticeship, that long obedience, that pilgrimage to God, being pilgrims, not tourists, which this psalm helps us to do. I think most of us, probably all of us, long for more. We long for more of an experience of God in our lives. We long for more of this abundant life that we hear about, that Jesus talks about. We long for more of the fruit of the Spirit in our lives and more of a transformation in our lives, in our attitudes, in our thoughts. We get a glimpse, we get a taste, we see some progress, but we want more. And the way to more of God, the way to more transformation, to more community, is not the way of a tourist. You can't just show up and get it downloaded or passively sit and receive it. It isn't instant. It isn't easy. It isn't passive. It's a long journey of practices, step by step, that form you. It's the way of a pilgrim. It's doing simple things, simple practices, over and over and over again that take us down the path towards God. And that's true for anything. People who are really, really fit and can run marathons, they don't just try really hard one day. And they don't just go to a seminar and learn the mental tricks to how to run marathons. They run every day or every other day, increasing distances for weeks on end so that they can do that. It's the way of anything. Edith and I got a taste of what it's like to be a pilgrim, a literal pilgrim, when we did that 800-kilometer Camino de Santiago in Spain last fall. And some people are surprised that we actually walked 800 kilometers in a month. And they say, how did you do that? And the answer is very simple. Slowly. One step at a time. And we had very simple practices. We reduced our life to very, very simple practices. Every day we got up early. We walked for 2 hours. We stopped for breakfast. We walked for 2 more hours. We stopped for coffee and changed our socks. Very, very important. We walked for 2 more hours, had lunch, had a shower, washed our clothes, had a nap, had supper, and went to bed by pilgrim midnight, which was by 10 at the latest, right? And you do that, those simple practices, you can cover a lot of ground. Even though it feels like on day 1 or day 2 or day 13 or day 15, we did not go very far today. But over time, it makes a big difference. It was hard at first, but then it got easier. Then it was enjoyable. And when we reached our goal, it was amazing. And that's what it's like being pilgrims, walking on our way to God. We develop simple, basic practices like reading a psalm every day for a week. And by the end of the summer, you may discover you have walked closer to God rather than drifted slowly away. Psalm 121 was sung by people as they approached Jerusalem in a mountainous region. So, again, I don't want to overdo this. Ben last week gave you 2 possible ways to look at a psalm. I'm going to give you 3. How about that? See if you can top that. I lift my eyes to the mountains. Where does my help come from? Those words will impact each of us in different ways. They're lyrics to a song. It's poetry. There isn't one way to view those words. I'm going to give you just 3 quick ways that these have impacted me and things I've read about other people. The first, the most obvious one to me, being an Albertan, living for a number of years in BC, spending lots of time hiking in the mountains and so on, even recently. When I look at the beauty of God's creation in the mountains, I'm just blown away. And there's other songs you can sing. You know, when I consider your heavens, the work of your hands, what is man that you are mindful of him? when I just see the amazing mountains and rivers and valleys and the beauty of God's creation, and then I think that the creator of that cares for me, blows me away. That's one way that you can look at these words, and I'm sure for many of you, you have felt that. There's another way, though, that we might not understand that the Israelites did when they sang these words, although we will catch the meaning in our lives very quickly. When the Israelites looked to mountains, particularly when they had to walk through them, they were actually really afraid. Because not only were there wild animals in the mountains, not only were there rough paths or places where they could get lost or fall off a cliff or twist their ankle, not only were there storms that might come up suddenly in the mountains and strand them, but the mountains were also filled with robbers who would attack people. That's why we have the story of the Good Samaritan, a man traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he traveled through the mountains and he fell among thieves, because that's where the thieves hung out. So I lift my eyes up to the mountains, maybe a cry for help in the midst of fear and danger. And I'm sure there are times, maybe not with mountains, but with other things, you're overwhelmed by the dangers and the things that you're afraid of. Another potential meaning that Israelites would have gotten that we wouldn't get right away, but again, when you look at it metaphorically, we go, oh yeah, I get that, is that during this period of time, and our kids downstairs know all about this, the people of Israel kept wandering away from God. God said, worship me, trust me, follow me, obey me, and they kept going, yes, and they would show up on Sabbath to worship, but on Monday and Tuesday when they were worried about their crops, or on Wednesday when they were going to walk through the mountains, or when they wanted to have a kid and they were having trouble having a kid, they would go to the local gods of the people around them, to Baal, to Asherah, and they would sort of hedge their bets, you know, I'll worship God on the Sabbath, but I'm going to ask Asherah to help me with my crops, and I'm going to help Baal to help me with fertility, I'm going to help this other, get this other priest or god or whatever to help me with safety as I travel through the mountains. And those shrines, those priests and priestesses, those altars were on the high places. So when you read the Old Testament, they talk about the king didn't tear down the high places. He's talking about all these shrines to other gods. And so Israelites walking through the mountains would have looked up to the mountains and seen shrine, Asherah pole, Baal, all around them. And it would have been a temptation, just like temptations we have, to say, I'm going to worship God on Sunday, but I'm not so sure he can help me on Monday. I'm going to trust something else. I'm going to hedge my bets. I'm going to look for security and success in other ways. So however looking at the mountains makes you feel, whether it's awe or fear or temptation, the next verse, verse 2, about my help, is a clear statement of choice. One that shows up pretty much at every point in every psalm. However I feel about God, however I feel about the dangers around me, however I feel my life is going, I choose to trust God. Every day, sometimes several times a day, we will be faced with a decision. Will we trust God, or will we choose to trust something else? Will we listen to the voices in our head and the voices all around us, or will we choose to listen to God's voice? Singing and praying the Psalms regularly as a practice will help us, shape us, remind us to choose God, to choose God. And those words have a power beyond me just saying you should choose God. Reading these words and singing them, getting these Psalms into us, forms us, shapes us, and gives us words to express when those challenges of those times come along. The rest of the song is a poem. It's a lyrical recitation and reinforcement of some very basic things that we all know. God's faithfulness, his effectiveness in watching over us. And the basic gist is basically, God will help you all the time and forever. You can trust God. But that's a really short, boring poem that doesn't have any power. But these words, in different form, over and over again, drive these truths into our hearts, not just knowledge in our heads. So he will not let your foot slip. Again, he's not just talking about when you go hiking, he won't let you slip off the path. He's talking about any time in life when you might slip up or fall on your face. Trust God. He'll guide you. He'll support you. God doesn't slumber or sleep. That is more than a statement about You know, another attribute of God. He's omniscient, he's omnipresent, and he never needs to sleep. It's a statement about God being vigilant, about God not getting distracted. One of the famous stories in our family, unfortunately it's about me, is when our oldest daughter Kathleen was about 18 months old, and Edith was out, and I was in charge, and Katie was playing about 12 feet away from me in the living room, and I was cleaning up the kitchen and watching a political debate on the little TV in the kitchen. And in between where I was sitting, about 6 feet, and then Katie was the front door, and somehow I never saw her toddle out that front door in just her diaper. And so all of a sudden the doorbell rings, and there's a really tough-looking biker on the front step, and he's holding my daughter in his arms, and he says, "Is this girl yours?" I don't know if I would have told Edith that story, except I think Katie could speak already at that point, but God is a much better parent than we are. He doesn't get distracted. He doesn't get focused on other things. That's all that's saying. The Lord will keep you from all harm. Shade you from the sun, from the moon. And again, this is poetic language. God will guard you from getting burned. When the heat is on, God will sustain you. And in terms of that moon thing, in ancient times, people thought the moon would make you crazy. That's why we have the lunar eclipse and the word lunacy. That's what that's about. So God will give you strength and protection from whatever is driving you crazy, whatever is making you anxious and stressed. But then the psalmist says, the Lord will keep you from all harm. Is that really true? And is that what the psalmist is really saying? If you trust God with your life, will he give you a free pass from any hurts in your life? Will you never slip and fall on the ice, or in metaphorically at work or at school? Will you never get a sunburned or get burned in some other way? Will you never struggle with depression or anxiety or any kind of mental illness? And the answer is no, of course not. Have you read the Psalms? Otherwise, why the cry at the beginning? The Bible's really honest. It never promises that we're never going to struggle. These are words of trust in the midst of challenging. And they're words of encouragement of God's vigilance and trustworthiness, and he'll walk with you. Eugene Peterson, in his book, Long Obedience, puts it this way. The Christian life is not a quiet escape to a garden. It's not a fantasy trip to a heavenly city. The Christian life is going to God. And in going to God, Christians travel the same ground that everyone else walks on. We breathe the same air. We feel the same dangers. We're subjected to the same pressures, and we get the same distresses, and ultimately we're buried in the same ground. The difference is that each step we walk, we know we are preserved by God. We know we are accompanied by God. And therefore, no matter what doubts we endure or accidents we experience, the Lord will guard our very life. Once we get this psalm into our hearts, it is impossible for us to gloomily suppose that being a Christian is an unending battle against forces that at any moment might break through and defeat us. Faith is not a precarious affair. It is the solid, massive, secure experience of God who guards our life. Paul in Romans 8 put it this way. What shall separate us from the love of God? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? As it is written, for your sake we face death all day long. We're considered as sheep to be slaughtered. But know, in all these things we're more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I'm convinced that neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, nor the present nor the future, nor any powers, nor height nor depth, nor anything else in all creation will be able to separate us from the love of God that is in Christ Jesus.